Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Now back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted this year's Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Huh? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after. 800-531-3815, toll-free coast-to-coast. I'm excited about Kirk Chaffetz being back on the show. Kirk is an award-winning reporter. He's built the world's first and largest global custom publishing network for McCann Erickson World Group. It's an organization that I used to do a little business with, which, as you may know, is the world's largest publishing agency. He's the author of an outstanding book that I think is really important, folks. It's called Thinking Inside the Box, the 12 Timeless Rules for Managing a Successful Business. Kirk, welcome back.
Thank you, Jim. It's nice to be back.
It's always a pleasure to have you back. Kirk, what I liked about your book is because you say things in your book so very well that I've tried to stay in the forefront, to keep in the forefront, and on the show and in my other activity on behalf of small business, and that's focus on the fundamentals. You call it thinking inside the box. I like that. That's a lot better way to say it. But what I've been talking about is focusing on the fundamentals. About 3 years ago, in the early part of 2000, I said, you know, I believe we're going to need to just get back to basics. We've gone through this nonsense of the 90s when people thought the laws of economics were suspended, the laws of fundamental business, you know, were out the window. Profit didn't mean anything anymore, and people were chasing eyeballs on the internet instead of trying to sell stuff.
Exactly.
And I said, you know, I think we're in for a little bit of a rough ride. And my audience will remember, those who read my stuff and who listen to me will remember, I started talking about fundamentals. And I did almost 6 months. Every day I did one segment on focusing on the fundamentals and trying to get people back to the things that you and I both know are the bedrock of being successful in business. And that's what this book is about, and I want to congratulate you on that.
Well, thank you very much, and I want to congratulate you on being an early leader in the return to fundamentals, because it's absolutely critical, I think, and if the 90s taught us any important lessons at all, in addition to not breaking the law, which is an ever-present lesson, hopefully, then it should have taught us that you cannot climb to the heights and stay there unless you build a really strong foundation underneath yourself.
Well, absolutely, and I have to say that I'm gonna do a little full disclosure here, Kirk. When I first started thinking about this, it was almost my own self-preservation that I was doing it for, because in those days I still knew a lot of people who were getting rich not focusing on fun. You know, they were spending millions of dollars, having raised that on a 6-page business plan, you know, and declaring, you know, promising never to make a profit.
Right.
Exactly. And I remember thinking, you know, here I am. I'm not doing that well, and I'm not doing as well as they are. And, you know, and I'm trying to create some real stuff here. And so I said, you know what? I've got to start saying what I believe, or I'm going to wind up going over to the dark side.
No, it's absolutely true. I tell you, and I by way of full disclosure, Jim, I am the former holder of thousands of shares of now fundamentally worthless paper
in an
internet venture. But it isn't that the internet is a bad idea, of course. It's that the notion of a corporate Ponzi scheme is a bad idea. You cannot fund a company that makes no money by constantly returning to investors and asking for more. Mm-hmm. That, in essence, is the definition of a pyramid scheme, where you fund your losses with other people's investments. Why the SEC permits it on the stock market when it's not permitted in the U.S. mails is amazing to me, but those are still the rules. You can still do it, but it doesn't mean we all have to fall for it again. And I think a lot of the things that were invented, quote-unquote, in the 90s just turned out to be exactly that. They were inventions. They were fiction. They were never going to come true. And that's why I started my book, Chapter One. You know, the first of the Timeless Rules is that some things never change. And it's very important to accept that, or else we spin our wheels constantly trying to change the unchangeable. And in some senses, I think that's what the 90s was about. That was the fundamental mistake, that something critically important and transcendent in the economy had changed. That's what we were told. And in fact, it just hadn't happened. The economy was still the economy.
Mm-hmm. And after all that madness, it's back to being, I mean, it's now clear, all that stuff's out of the way, and we're back to what we always had, which is the fundamentals of the marketplace. Stand by, Kirk. We're going to take a quick break, folks. It's 20 till. Be right back with Kirk Chaffetz, the author of Thinking Inside the Box. I don't feel so... We're back at 17 till.
There's a black man.
Little Hoosier music there.
Black
Thank you for staying with us. 800-531-3815. Let me tell you about our show coming up straight ahead. We got a new friend. Brian Figuera is going to be on the show. And he's with Deloitte & Touche. And one of the things he does is he goes around fighting bull in business. Kirk Chaffetz, you'll enjoy that. You'd like to know about this guy. He and his organization is single-handedly trying to take the bull out of business communication. And it's just pretty interesting. We're going to talk to him about that in the next hour. And then after that, we're going to be visiting with Michael Cox, who's with the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. And he and I are going to talk about the fruits of free trade. Why is free trade a good idea? And Kirk, free trade is fundamental too, isn't it?
Absolutely. Especially since, for me personally, my company derives more than half of its revenue and income outside the United States.
Yep.
The last thing in the world that we need are barriers to doing that. And that means we have to keep our markets open in hopes that it will encourage others to keep their markets open. And I think it's been pretty well proven that raises the level for everybody.
Well, it does. And you know, one of my fairly recent heroes is a 19th century economist / comedian, I call him, and that's Frederick Bastiat. I don't know if you know Bastiat, but he said about 150 years ago, he said, when goods cross borders, armies don't.
Right.
Isn't that great?
It's a great line, and I think it also, one of the most fascinating things that I discovered in doing the research for my book was how fundamental to human relationships the basic rules of our economy are. That when you trace human civilization back to its origins. And as a very well-known French anthropologist, a fellow named Claude Lévi-Strauss, who sort of invented modern anthropology, is responsible for many of these ideas. What you discover is that what's fundamental to human conduct is the notion of exchanging things,
mm-hmm.
and that those exchanges are what began to kickstart human culture.
Yep.
Because the exchanges developed relationships between clans and tribes,
mm-hmm.
and those relationships spread out into trade networks that crossed borders very early on. I mean, as early as Neanderthal man, there were wide-ranging trade routes.
When traded shells for a stone or something, and with Gork. But you know, it's what another great economist and one of the guys who basically people base their economic thinking on, many people, and that's Adam Smith, called division of labor.
Right, precisely.
And the thing is those are the, as you said earlier, those are the bedrock essentials, the bedrock bedrocks, I should say, of everything that we do today. And
no, absolutely. And you find, if you look at the history of the 13th and 14th centuries, these wide-ranging, dispersed global markets where labor and goods are sourced from the best providers to create very complex artifacts, things like sailing ships that that were bought and sold. And all of that stuff would be very comfortable on, you know, today's Wall Street Journal if you were writing a report about it.
Right.
There's nothing unusual.
And you could find one on eBay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the new twist, is communication. But I think that this whole notion, again, during the 90s, and it persists today, people keep talking about a new business model, quote, end quote. And I maintain there are no new business models. You just won't find one. I don't care how long you look. We've been looking for one for several thousand years. We're still operating on the same one that's pretty much hardwired into the human brain, which is this idea of equivalent exchange.
One of the things that I've said is that there are no new rules, but there are new tools.
I think that's absolutely right. I think that's a great way to say it.
But I will say this, and that is that what's making it seem like there's a new economy, what's making it seem like things have changed significantly, radically, fundamentally, is because we have so many new, exciting, dramatic, productive, efficient, all these new things that have just come out. We got to admit, Kirk, the things that have happened in the last 10 years have just taken our breath away. And not only the fact that we have these things, but the fact that they've come so fast, and that they're changing, that they've replaced their predecessor so rapidly and so much without prejudice, the fact that it has happened so fast, that's what's taken people's breath away, and that's what I think is making people think that we got a lot of new rules here.
The truth is we
just need to settle down and realize what is actually going on. And Kirk, I wanted to finish that up because we're going to a break, and when we come back, I'm going to let you talk about what I just said, because I know you just got 100 outstanding ideas welling up in you to talk about that. So we're going to do that right after these messages, folks. I'll be off my soapbox when we come back. I promise. Tim Till, stay with us.
If I could show you somehow,
we're back. 7 Till. Kirk Chaffetz is our guest and our good friend, the author of Thinking Inside the Box. Kirk, we need to know how to get your book.
Well, you can get my book by going to Amazon.com. That's probably the easiest way. By marching into any major bookstore, Barnes & Noble's, Borders. Try those ways.
All right, let me spell his last name, folks. He's got a name like Blasingame. It always helps to spell. It's Kirk with a K on each end, and then Chaffetz, and it's C-H-E-Y with a Fitz on the end, F-I-T-Z, C-H-E-Y. Just break it down. Kirk with two K's and Chaffetz, C-H-E-Y, Fitz, F-I-T-Z. Type that into any of the online search engines or ask for it at your local bookstore. And I will tell you, if you're a small business owner and you remember the days when you thought everybody else was getting rich and you didn't understand why you weren't, and it was because you weren't trying to steal any money from anybody. You were trying to do a good job and just be a good citizen in your community and provide good value for your customers. You're gonna find a home in Kirk's book, I promise you. You're going to like it a lot. Kirk, you want to give us a website?
The best website is SimonSays.com, which is my publisher's website.
Okay.
And that's SimonSays.com. That's Simon & Schuster's website.
Okay. Now, Kirk, as we went out in the last break, I was ranting and raving in one of my delirium tremens, And I know you had some things you wanted to comment on that, so I'm going to let you do that.
Well, I just think it's very important, especially for small business owners, to not get carried away with the technological revolution. There's a lot of things that technology can do for small business. There's a lot of ways in which it can save money, improve speed, extend reach, all of those things. But as I say in the book, we can't get the economy and technology confused with one another just because they both end with Y. Technology is an overlay on a business. It's not a fundamental part of most businesses. And I think it's very interesting that Jim Collins, who wrote Good to Great, which has been the sort of perennial bestseller business book for the last couple of years, mentions in his book that technology, in his survey of many, many, many successful large companies, was never the determiner of success or failure.
Mm-hmm.
It was just there in the background, and that good CEOs don't look to technology to solve their problems.
But they, at the same time, though, they knew that they had to have it.
Absolutely.
It just wasn't what the culture was built around.
Exactly. What I keep hearing over and over again is that technology is transforming everything. Now, in one sense, that's true. The wheel changed everything. The invention of the stirrup on a saddle changed all of warfare.
Yeah.
But what we can see, unfortunately, is that over the centuries, while the tools of war have changed, the way that armies are organized hasn't changed in several thousand years.
Mm-hmm.
The platoon and the way the chain of command worked, and even the incentives that were offered to good soldiers, are pretty much the same in the Roman army
mm-hmm.
as they are in today's army.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they're the same at Microsoft as they were in the Roman army.
You know, one of the things that I keep coming back to, and I mention this quite often, it just seems to keep popping up, Kirk, and that is, in his book Megatrends, John Nesbitt said 20 years ago, I'm paraphrasing what he said, but he said essentially, yes, we're going to gravitate to high tech, but we're always going to want high touch.
Absolutely.
And that's an important thing for managers to remember, isn't it?
Yeah, it's absolutely critical, because one of the great examples of money down the drain on technology in the last couple of years has been what we call customer relationship management systems.
Mm-hmm.
Business spent about $11 billion on those systems in 2000 and 2001, parts of 2002, just in that two-year time span alone, and most of it failed. Why did it fail? Because software cannot manage customer relationships.
Mm-hmm. It can help human beings manage those, but it can't do it by itself.
And precisely.
That's the message. And, Kirk, let me say this. I have to stop you because we're coming upon the end of the hour. But I'm always glad when my guests have more to say than we have time. That means you're going to come back to see us another day.
I'd be delighted to.
Kirk Chapis, ladies and gentlemen, Thinking Inside the Box. Check that book out. You will like it, I promise you. Kirk, thanks a lot. See you next time.
Thank you, Jim.
Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest entrepreneurial country in the world. This is Jim Blasingame. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.